You can't really see them.
Okay, we're going to get started. This is Jonathan Ameth, who will be talking to us about DEMCA, data portal for collaborative work on traditional ecology.
Okay, thank you very much to the organizers here and for the, what is it, every 2 years the conference is here?
Yes.
Okay. And anyway, so I started out as an anthropologist, then I went into linguistics and language documentation, and as part of language documentation, we got a lot of words for plants and animals. And as I worked in different areas, I got less interested in what does this indigenous term mean in the language, but rather what sort of theoretical importance can we, you know, what can we learn from comparative ethnobiology? So I gradually moved in that direction, and my latest effort has been to develop a portal whereby we can develop mechanisms to compare ethnobotanical knowledge or ethnobiological knowledge across different communities. One of the things I'm very interested in is training native speakers, basically indigenous biologists, to document their community flora and fauna, and then create a system, which is the web portal here, in which they can be in contact with a virtual community of biologists, linguists, anthropologists, and sort of work that way. So these three pictures were all taken by native speaking biologists in three different communities. And I put them up there because one of the things that I am trying to develop is a way in which this can be converted into a knowledge of the nomenclature, classification, and use of mostly flora in the communities. So, you know, from a theoretical perspective, why do we study ethnobiology in a comparative manner? And I think there are two major paths that people have taken. One is to study cognates in genetically related languages, develop the proto-terms for these biotaxa, and use that to establish the ecosystems of ancient communities. That was done for Uto-Aztecan, which I'm mostly familiar with. The other one is to look at genetically unrelated languages and look at calques and loams and use that as evidence of contact. So the problem with that is that if we want to do something like that, basically you do your own study and then you start looking in different books, right? You just start doing, and there's no really way in which to build up knowledge and create sort of more and more dynamic interaction between scholars who are trying to do that and the communities. So that's what I was trying to develop. So what we need here is a comparative perspective, and we need a collaborative project, okay? And the collaborative projects are best, I think, articulated through a web portal that allows the participation of communities, native biologists, linguists, and anthropologists working together. And that's what I'm trying to do with this portal. I was introduced to something called Symbiota, which is just received an NSF grant for about $750,000 to develop Symbiota 2. It's extremely, extremely powerful in everything but culture and ethnobiology. The first webinar I was in, I was looking at the Darwin Core, which is their metadata standard that they use. And I was like, where do you put in the community? And it was sort of, why do you need the community name? Because you have the coordinates, and you can draw polygons, so that's basically enough. So it really, even questions of vernacular name, it was very sort of ad hoc. So the project I'm trying to develop is to develop metadata standards for ethnobiological and cultural data that we can integrate into biological collections. Okay, so we build upon Symbiota, and I'm looking at some of the differences are the standards for ethnobiological data. First of all, there are no tags, right? There's very little agreement on any tags, even something with vernacular names. If you look at people when they're doing ethnobiological monographs, they'll just name the language. They won't use an ISO 639-3 tag or a glottal code or any other tag. They'll give you the community, of course, and you can get it from that. But in terms of a web-based or a data structure, there's really no tag in which you can define the vernacular language. The other thing that I've noticed is the difference between sort of a biological perspective and a sociological or ethnobiological perspective. In biology, you're really interested in what the expert says, right? So you go into a herbarium, you have a collection of Asteraceae, you're at the Smithsonian, you ask Harold Robinson what it is, you don't ask anybody else, you just want the expert. Whereas in ethnobotany or ethnozoology, you're really interested in the variation, or that's an important data. So you want to preserve that. So you might go into a community and 10 different people will give you 4 different names for it. You want to record all that, right? You don't want to just say, I'm just going with Joe because he knows the most. So how do we preserve that, and what can we use that to analyze the distribution of knowledge within the community? So the effort is also to develop a data portal that can do that for us, maintain the original knowledge, but also analyze sort of the distribution of the knowledge in the community. And the other question I have is of cognates, loans, and calcs. It's not always clear, let's say, what a calc is or what a cognate is or what a loan is. There might be disagreements among people whether something is a loan or maybe independently invented or a loan from a third language that's not taken into consideration, etc. So what we want in this portal is a way to annotate the data, okay? Right? So somebody might see it and say, a botanist might go in there and say, this is a loan from Totonac into Nahuatl. And then an expert might say, no, it's not really a loan from Totonac into Nahuatl, it's this or whatever, you know. And so, and keep records of that, right? Sort of like a wiki. So that's what I'm... Okay. This is just an example of reconstructed terms to Proto-Eudo-Stecan.
Yes.
And it was done by Fowler. And she used the fact that all these reconstructed to Proto-Eudo-Stecan to help define the ecosystem of the ancestral homelands, right? So that's what I mentioned at the beginning. That's one of the sort of branches of knowledge that is studied through comparative ethnobiology, right? Here are word loans. And here we see some word loans from Nahuatl and Totonac, right? Xopepe is Nahuatl in Sierra Norte de Puebla. I don't know why you borrow a word for cockroach, but they did. You see, there's only one word that I noticed that I've documented that's a loan from Nahuatl into Totonac. It's omisal, which has a clear etymology in Nahuatl. And then Xonotl, I always thought was a borrowing from Totonac into Nahuatl, but I spoke to somebody who says, no, it's the other way around. I'm not quite sure I would believe that. But at any rate, if you have a data portal where these types of annotations can be layered on top of each other, you start entering into a discussion, you correct any errors that somebody might make. Let's look at calcs, which are loan translations. I put this up, Totonac is woman's walking cane, Nahuatl is Itopilsin Lamatsin, which means old woman, that's obviously a calc. Interestingly, the Latin name means lance, which is similar to a walking stick. But I want to give another example there of a type of calc-like loan, and that is the word for the selachinella. I don't know how you say that in English. It's a sort of type of fern-like thing that's very low-lying. But it's called snake's nest in Totonac, but it's used as a remedy against ticks. Okay, and the word for tick is shkapa, or shkap. Okay? In Nahuatl, it's called ichkapashiwik, in two areas of Nahuatl. One in which they use it as tick medicine, and one in which they don't, but they have no idea what it means. So really what's being borrowed here is the use and the name, but not together, right? So you have these types of complicated situations that you also want to document in any comparative project. The last one is camel spiders and whip scorpions. In Nahuatl, it's called pinawistli, which means shame. And in Mixtec, at least along the Pacific coast, it's called tika, or tika'a, is animal of shame. T is the old classifier for animal, and ka'a is shame. So you have the same meaning, and the idea is that if you see one, something shameful is going to happen to you. This is an example of what we can do with this type of information. This is the mutilids, the velvet ants, and you can see the different names. They all are omens, right? They're either related to food or they're related to fortune, good fortune or bad fortune. You see in Totonac and in Chetino, they're both, it's called happy ant, right? It's happy because something bad's going to happen to you, and it's sort of mocking you. But in other areas, it's related to food. It's called jaguar ant. But in Mixtec, it's called meat broth tiger or bean broth tiger. If you see the typical, the Dasimutillas, which are the orange and black ones, you're going to have a nice meat soup for dinner. And if you see some of the small Pseudomethicas that are sort of grayish and black, you're just going to have beans. But what's interesting is here we have a cultural area, right? That's defined by sharing of some sort of omen-like quality to these. And I put this on a poster, but in a data portal, that would be there forever, right? You put it there, you stay there. People can comment on it, they can add to it. So that's really the idea of the data part. So when I mentioned that first, the Darwin Corps, and they just have vernacular name, so thanks to Gary Holton, who's here, he recommended I use glottolog, and I'm forever thankful to that. So the DEMCA portal and Symbiota now will use glottolog. Now, the advantage of that is you obviously get a taxonomic hierarchy to the languages. So if you want to search for cognates across different languages, you just click on a higher node, right? There's no problem. You don't have to. It's not like an ISO 639, right? So you get that. So you can't really see it, but you go all the way up there. So here's how it works in setting up a project on DEMCA. So DEMCA's project-based. So here, first, you have a language manager, a community manager, and a personnel manager. So when you start a project, you want to set up the personnel, who's involved in the project, who are your consultants, biologists, whatever you want. Then you set up a community. What are the communities that you're dealing with and where they're located, what their name is, and you have a thesaurus for that as well. And then you pick the language. And you can see here as you type in Nahuatl, you get this whole list, and you get both the lower level and you get the higher level. You see there's no, you can't see it actually, but there's no ISO code there, right? Because it's a higher level. And then when you start creating, here's a personnel file, right? The language is, you can only pick a language that's in your project, right? So there's some sort of control for standardization on all those. So here's, I won't go into too much. You get the name, you get the language spoken, whether it's the first language, second language, et cetera, learned language, married in language. Then you get the roles, and this is just controlled vocabulary that can be changed. And then you get the default display of the consultant, right? Whether you want to use the name, whether you want to use a code, or whether you want to make it anonymous, right? So you just set up your project that way. Another thing that I was concerned about is I have a lot of recordings, and I guess a lot of people here, of native experts, right, on speaking about any local flora and fauna, and how do you get it so that the community can actually listen to it, right? I mean, I think I was mentioning before that you don't want them to download an EAF file and install it on their computer and run it, right? I mean, that's not very efficient. So this is a module for uploading. You choose your file, which is your EAF file. You create the path to the MP3. You do a title for the presentation, and then you upload it. And then the administrative dashboard gives you these options. So these are all the tiers in Elan. You select which ones you want to make available to users, not necessarily display, but make available to users. Where do you want it displayed, either scrolling in a scroll box or one line display at the top with the colors you want, et cetera, et cetera. Okay? Once you upload it, you can link it to a taxon. So we have taxon records, okay? And this is a conversation about justiciaria, okay? So I want people who, when they look up justiciaria, they get this, okay? They get this recording. And the final thing is you have a user interface, so the users can alternate what they see, right? And this is done in real time. So if a botanist says, this is really cool, but I really don't want to see the Mixtec in the center, I'd rather just see the English translation. I don't care about the Spanish, they can modify it here, and it will automatically change the view. I don't think I have enough time to show that right now. So the second thing that I've been trying to develop is a way in which communities can document their local flora at a minimal cost and in maximum collaboration. with experts. So the idea is that DEMCOG will manage your visual, your flow of visual material, right? So people in the community are trained. You saw the pictures at the beginning. My experience, we're doing a Totonac Village, close to between 95%+ of the photos can be identified to genus by experts if you have a good support network of botanists. And that's fairly high. And a lot of times, if you know the local flora, they're monotypic genera, or they have two species. So from that, once you get to genus, you can then get to species fairly easily. But even so, you can triage your effort in terms of actual collection if you want to do that, right? So if you get, 95% to genus from a really good photos like you saw, probably to species you'll get maybe 65-70%, depending on how nice the botanists are to you. But that might cut down your actual collection effort quite a bit and save a lot of money. And you get the photos, right? So this is from DEMCA. This is a search for Conostechia icosandra, which is called Totolishka polin in Nahuatl in the Sierra Norte. I don't remember what it is in Totonac, but it's in the database. So when you get these are all the collections, right, of that species. And these can be mapped. I'm not probably going to show that tonight, but these can be mapped. We've uploaded some of the photos just by hand. We're developing a module for automatically batch processing photos, and the one that has a photo to the right. So from this list, you can go either to a species record or to an occurrence record. A species record is about the species, about the scientific species. Okay? And an occurrence record is about the occurrence of the species in a particular collection. So this is straight out of Symbiota, right? So here we have, this is how it would appear. If we clicked on any one of those and went to the collection record, this is what we'd see. And what we're going to be adding to that is, you know, vernacular name use, links to multimedia, et cetera, and hopefully get a little nicer interface here. These are all the photos of the actual collection, right, taken in the field. So that's what's called an occurrence record, okay? Then you can go to a species record. Okay, and here I say there's two different accounts, onomasiological account, which is a thesaurus. How many ways are there of saying this species? And if you have a large database with comparative material, you can say, I've said this and this and this and this in all these different languages, and you can start searching for calcs, loans, whatever. Okay, the other is a semasiological account, which is the regular dictionary. So given a particular indigenous name, how many meanings does it have? And it's not always one, right? I mean, there's some words that are used maybe for higher level taxa, but there are also others that are used for several taxa in different groups. Okay, and the other thing you can do, when we went back to the list, you can do an analysis of the distribution of knowledge in the community. So for all these collections of Conostechia icosandra, how many people were able to identify it, and how varied were the names? Okay, so if you're going to do something like revitalization or cultural revitalization, you at least get an X-ray of the knowledge in the community and what might be the most important things to document, let's say, in a 100-page book of important flora of the region. Okay, so that's... And then the final thing is the output to community. So one of the things I like to do is produce guides for the local community to use. And this is for a Totonac village. And it's a fairly complete floristic guide. This is a floristic collection, so it has maybe like, probably has 900 species in it, but probably only less than half are named. So you can do it either way. You can limit it to only things that are named in the local language, or you can do a complete floristic study. And the idea of TDEMCA eventually will be to generate these automatically, right? There might have to be some adjustment to it, but you include this here, the scientific name. I guess we can't really see it here, but scientific name, the collection numbers, the family, the Totonac name, other names that I put in by hand. So this is Amolquilitl in Nahuatl. I don't know what it would be in Totonac, et cetera, et cetera. So eventually you're going full circle, right? You're getting something back into the community, but you're also integrating the project into a scientific research. And sort of that's sort of a balance that's not always easy to strike, right? To get something that's has an impact, at least in terms of theoretical research. I'll have time for two quick things, then I'll show you that. Okay, well, this is Mesolec. So one of the things I'm interested in is, this is a dictionary project I'm working on, but we did narrative. So, you know, let's say this is really just pretty basic, but the idea is that this is basically IMDI data, right, that's then created in this way. And the idea would be that at the bottom, you would have a, this is where it's been archived, and you'd have any file. You'd have, actually, this is a single sound file with transcription, so you would have a link to that. So I think one of the problems I've had with some archives, you know, you can't find the stuff easily, right? So the idea is to create a very powerful search engine, so you can search on different data fields very easily and get the entire record. So that's that. And if I have 30 seconds left, I'll show the okay, so this is the thing I showed before. So so here is, right, the any user can use this. So what they can do is, let's say we just wanted to see the Spanish translation, so we get rid of the English, right? And let's say we wanted to put the Spanish in the scroll bar, so we do it that way. And then the transcription now is both underlying and surface, right? So maybe the person really just wants to see the surface transcription. So that would be, we get rid of that, and we put the into this as well, one line display. And we do the same thing here, into the one line display. Okay, so now we have it, right? So let's say a botanist who wants to hear about it, and then you play it back. This does not change the default. So this is the mishtik is up there. So I mean, there are a lot of really good tools out there that do things that are, you know, very good, from Flex and from Elan. And this was designed really specifically for line-by-line playback and make it very simple for the community. And we've experimented with Treaky and Zapotec and stuff, and it can be, you know, uploaded pretty easily. It's still not an independent, it's open source, but it's dependent on some of the functionalities of Symbiote at this point. So, that's it.
Thank you. Jonathan, you have about 7 minutes for questions. 6 or 7 minutes for questions.
Okay, are there any questions? Local experts in the communities?
Yeah, and then how much sort of over, because this is obviously very complicated and there's a lot involved in it. Do you have to do a lot of oversight of it to make
no.
it properly?
In fact, I'm like a secretary now. And I don't like, you mean secretary? I mean, it's so like that field guide that you saw, mm-hmm. I just paste the pictures in. That's all. That's really my contribution. I mean, I trained the speakers to use, like, they use a H4 Zoom to record, although not for that. I mean, we didn't really do that. But the photographs, for example, I did teach the photographic method that I use in the field. And now the people in the field take better photographs than I do, because I'm too nervous to, you know, play. And they're just like, we want to get a good photograph, and they're very proud of it. So in that way, the communities have been wonderful. So I have no problem there, and also working with biologists, like professionals from the community or from the Uruguay community, really facilitates, you know, working with the community and stuff like that. So we've done videos. We're also video documenting use of plants, things like that. But I don't have any In fact, my goal in a future grant is just really to get funds for let's say 6 communities to document their own flora, let's say, through this method, and really try to make it almost automated in a sense, right? They upload the photos, they get the, it's distributed to botanists who put in the identifications, the level of, and botanists might comment on each other's identifications, and then at that point you triage, you say, okay, we should really recollect A, B, C, D. Or maybe in the moment you have taken the photograph, you collect it. But I sort of view this as the idea is sort of self-sufficient, right? And the collaboration with communities has been pretty amazing.
How do you identify what the plants are? Is that like a normal process?
I don't do it. I mean, I've learned a little, like something like the Tokolish Kapolin, the Donosekiri Kosanga, I know it, because I know the flora. I don't have a botanist perspective on it, so I'll say this is this plant, and somebody say, no, it has stipules, it can't be that, it has to be a rubiaceae or something like that. You know, I don't really look at a plant like a botanist will be, but a lot of times, I'm working with this guy now, he's ridiculous, he's like, he has like primary school education, he says, yeah, I collected a rubiaceae yesterday, and I have no idea what it is.
Well, I'm...
You know, so they'll get, but then I send the photographs out to maybe 4 colleagues who are very helpful to me, and they'll usually get it to genus from the photos, or to family at least, and then there are about 100 other botanists that I then send the photograph to and get a preliminary debt, and then eventually they get the specimen that I just collect.
And I'm asking, because I really like the idea of this database, and we've talked before years ago, and in the area where I work, in the Great Basin, there are a number of plants that are identified with native names, but we don't know exactly what they refer to, but getting people to take pictures of them and going through this process. So I was really wondering from the point of view of whether your database structure will even be made available sometime for other people.
The idea is really to share this. So that regional module, so this is DEMCA, which is Central America. If anybody here's from the Native American community wants to use this software, that would be, that's my dream. I just haven't been able to make the contact.
Yeah.
And then maybe for South America. I mean, Utah has the entire floor of Utah is like 2,500 plants.
Yeah.
That single community has 2,000.
Yeah,
so,
I know it's many fewer, but they could still be under-identified.
Yeah, here. There might be something like that, but there's a group.
Thank you. Yeah, I really liked it.
One more question?
Yeah. I was going to ask you about your link to the Ilan file.
Huh?
Is that Ilan file located on your computer, or
yeah.
is it archived somewhere?
No, it's
so
my computer.
Mike could link with his beautiful Ilan annotated files in Ilan, for example. Would that
I actually wrote it. I mean, I could do this anywhere. The ELR file, the EF file has to be somewhere, right?
Yes. That's my question.
If it's online, if it's online, what the program would do would be download it and then re-upload it, probably. Maybe it could do it that way. I mean, I haven't thought of that possibility, but it's probably either just to read it online on the server or just to download it and then re-upload it. Because you do want to be able to configure everything for the display. What I've noticed in a lot of EF files, they're not done how I did them. So I've actually asked people to give me their Elon files. Not everybody uses like symbolic association and things like that that some people use. So we've actually had to change the software a little bit to adjust for that. Some people don't name the tiers. So we had to change that recently so that in a default, if the tier is not named, the participant's not named, the tier name would show up on the side, things like that. But yeah, it would be fairly simple to do it for an archive. And I think one of the problems of archives is it's really not, native speakers can't see their stuff.
That's why I was thinking.
You know? Really. stuff.
Thank you very much.
Thank you all.
Okay, the last 2 minutes, right?
It's like the last half of the box.
Slow tag from the box?
Yes.